Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Sis Internet Radio. Sisters in Spirit, affectionately called Sis, is a nurturing environment for women that inspires harmony in everyday living, shares resources that empower, offers information and support that nourishes the soul, balances our mental and physical well-being, and promotes inner peace and heightened spirituality. Our vision is a world where women live consciously, harmoniously, and spiritually to positively impact our lives and the lives of those with whom we come into contact. Join us as we live life with style, grace, and of course, much joy.
Welcome to our Sisters in Spirit Book Club discussion for Monday, November 25th, 2013. You're here with your host, Deborah Skye Samuels, and our special guest this evening is our own Darlene Raisa Nazir. Today we will discuss what is essentially our second reading selection for the book club, and we're really excited to have this discussion this evening. Our title is Leaping Over the Hurdles of Life, A Tiger's Journey, written by Darlene. Before we get into our discussion, I'd like to share a little more information with you about Darlene, who is an author, talk radio show host, motivational speaker, and mental coach who has made empowerment of others her life's mission. She does this by leading two very distinct organizations that focus on infusing harmony into one's everyday life. Darlene is the founder of Sisters in Spirit, an organization that provides information and inspiration to help a woman step outside of her comfort zone to achieve her best self. And she also founded the Young Tiger Foundation to address the tragedy of suicide occurring in epidemic proportions amongst young black males, as well as the trauma experienced by the surviving family and friends. Leaping Over the Hurdles of Life, A Tiger's Journey, is a biography of her only child's life and is her first publication addressing the signs, symptoms, and ways to heal mental distress. She is the 2013 honoree for her work with suicide awareness and prevention by Beauty In, Beauty Out, an organization that honors women who make their communities a better place. Darlene hails from New York City. She holds a Bachelor of Science in Business Administration from St. Paul's College and MS in Project Management from Boston University and is a project management professional. So let's get started with our discussion. Again, welcome, Darlene, and we're very happy to have you with us to talk about Leaping Over the Hurdles of Life, A Tiger's Journey.
Thanks, Skye. I'm really glad to be talking about this topic, especially this month because it is Mental Health Month. I know a lot of people don't know that November is Mental Health Month that started in 1955 and has been celebrated ever since. And over the years, we've seen increases in people who have mental imbalance. And a lot of that has to do with the foods that we eat, the environments that we live in, and all of the energy waves that we are encountering with cell phones and computers and all of that that disrupts our body's balance.
Yes, that's so true. And mental health distress and issues is coming to the forefront now. It has been very, very taboo for a long time. And, you know, people are just not aware. But luckily, you know, with Mental Health Month, people like yourself that are, you know, that realize that we need to bring more attention to it, especially in the population of young African-American males, young ethnic males, we are becoming more aware. So would you talk to us a little bit about, first, let me go back. I felt that the book reads like an intimate conversation with Kalik. Why did you feel it was important to bring this awareness about by telling his story in particular?
Well, I have to be honest with you. My first shot at it was an attempt to tell it from a third-party view, mm-hmm. and it just wasn't saying anything. It wasn't communicating. Mm-hmm. And so when I made the shift to tell it from the first person, the story just began to flow, and it was as if he wanted this story to be told, and the story was flowing through me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had an opportunity to share his story and to make his life and his manner of death to have not been in vain, because now it's an opportunity to share the experience with others so that they can recognize and understand more about what mental health and mental imbalance, what they both are.
Right. And you definitely achieved that with the writing style, and you really captured the reader's attention, because again, it was like it was him telling his life story on a very personal level, so that it really engaged the reader, and you wanted to find out the next thing. You really developed a relationship, you know, as you read the book. So we want to open up the lines to our participants and, you know, really just start some discussion about, what they felt about the book and how did the book resonate with our readers. So let me do this. I will open up the lines and let's start the discussion. Again, you know, it read as if it was a personal conversation with colleague, and I found that as we were going through chapters one and two, growing up in early childhood, it seems like you could see how his personality in terms of awareness. You know, I felt that he was a lot more aware and attentive than children his age. So that's one of the things that kind of captivated me immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that kind of stuck out. I'm saying to myself, you know, would children at that age be so contemplative about their environment, about relationships with each other? And so that's one of the things that kind of grabbed me is to say that he had a very strong and, to me, what read as an old soul or
right.
a mature soul for his age group, just reading some of the things that he thought about in terms of relationships, even in terms of the religion, you know, the environment that he was raised in for many years in his life. And what I'd like to do is open up the line so that we will be able to hold a discussion with some of our listeners.
Okay.
And I invite you to chime in at any time. Would our listeners like to make any comment about how chapters 1 and 2 affected them, or what resonated with them from chapters 1 and 2? We see that we have a couple of callers on the line, 4382. Feel free to chime in, and any of our participants that are in the chat room, feel free to chime in as well.
Okay, and I can make a couple of comments before we actually get into the book, because when we talk about health, a lot of people leave out the mental health aspect of it,
mm-hmm.
and the book was written just to let people be aware that your mental health is just as important, if not more so important, as your physical health, because
mm-hmm.
you can be handicapped, have great mental health, and have excellent quality of life. But I wanted to get into a definition of what mental health is, because some people just think it means, are you crazy, are you not crazy?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really like to use the word crazy. It's more, are you imbalanced or balanced? So mental health is a compilation of our social, emotional, and psychological states. So good mental health means that you've got a nice balance of all of that going on, and it includes the way that we feel about ourselves, the quality of our relationships with other people, how we are able to manage our feelings and deal with change and uncertainty. I mean, change and uncertainty are a big indicator of how you deal with that. It's an indicator of your balance. And it operates on a continuum. It's not always going to be the same depending on what's going on in your life. That's going to impact your mental health. And everybody has mental health, and everybody has ups and downs, and everybody deals with good and bad mental health. And so you should always, or we should always, be monitoring our mental health to see where we are and where attention is needed.
And that's true. And you know, in reading the book and then in some of the studies that we've done or conversations that we've had about mental health before, it also, what resonates with me is that our ability, as you said, to adapt to change, that's one of the things that kind of stands out with me, our ability to adapt and how we adapt to change and continuously being flexible and being able to, I guess it's just really the flexibility and how we, our perception. I think that's another thing, too, because when we have those mental imbalances or we're going through issues, our perception of things is very, very important.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and going to extremes.
And as you read in the book, in the early chapters, Khalik dealt with a lot of change. So at the age of 4, he moved into an Islamic community with me, and then we left that community at 12, and then he dealt with changes going back into a normal society, as we can call it, and entering public school, mm-hmm. and just going through the everyday motions of life that most people would consider average but were very foreign to not only what he knew but also to his core belief system.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're dealing with things that go against your core belief system, mm-hmm. that's going to cause even more turmoil and more trauma within your being.
Mm-hmm. And that struck me as well, how deeply those changes affected him and how he expressed how deeply those changes affected him. And that brings us back to, you know, when we're dealing with young people, our children or people that are in our immediate life surrounding, you know, to be conscious of those kinds of things, you know, abrupt changes, the number of changes that we have to go, even for adults, because
right.
for adults,
exactly.
You know, we digest it in different ways and we adjust to it in different ways, but it can be very traumatic.
That's right.
So, you know, we need to be a little more conscious as adults, especially when we're working with our children and young adults that we are caretakers of and try to, you know, figure out how things like that, how change or disruption in their regular routines, how that affects them.
We need to acknowledge our traumas, touch them gently, and deal with them and, mm-hmm. you know, not call ourselves any kind of names or think that there's any lack in us mm-hmm. if we have issues dealing with them mm-hmm. because it's just a normal process of life. Mm-hmm. And there are support systems out there to help you. It's just that in our society, we don't have them in place without having to deal with certain social taboos, as you mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
But if we did have check systems that detected and treated mental health as an ordinary annual checkup, let's say, mm-hmm. then we wouldn't have the issues that we have today. And I am now a mental health advocate because mm-hmm. of what happened with Khalik and his taking his life by suicide. And I didn't have any clue about the signs and symptoms, and so therefore I think it's really important for people to understand why we need to focus on mental health and to understand the signs and symptoms so that those whom they love would not have to have such a traumatic experience or go through that amount of pain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we see that playing out more recently within the last couple of years publicly, where people, you know, who have had imbalances are, you know, doing public, you know, causing public harms to others and then to themselves as well. So, you know, the focus is shifting a little bit more and maybe, you know, it's encouraging us to look at, you know, our loved ones, our friends and families. And when we see something, say something or try to adjust it. It might make a difference and it might not make a difference, but to at least make the attempt. And we never know how, you know, just making the attempt or reaching out or acknowledging might persuade that individual, might help an individual, you know, might encourage them to open up and seek help.
Yeah, especially for young Black American mm-hmm. males who are taught that they have to man up and they don't feel like they have an outlet to express mm-hmm. their emotions and deal with something that might be traumatic when they're expected to just be okay.
Mm-hmm. And I want to encourage our listeners, if you'd like to join the discussion or talk about something that has reached out to you from the book, we encourage you to press number one so that we can acknowledge you and bring you into the discussion. Moving on to chapter three, clarity and discovering who I am, I thought the experiences at Morehouse, you know, it just shows different types of, it just shows how a person who could be so aligned and so oriented, goal-oriented, and as you said, a person that seems like they are just perfectly fine on the outside can be, you know, going through so many questions about themselves, about how things are going. And typically on the outside, they might be looking like everything is just flowing smoothly. So I thought the discussion about in Chapter 3 about how the 10-year plan, you know, you would think that, okay, you know, here's a young person that has goals. You know, how many young people at that age really has formatted goals, you know, has goals, you know, is looking at things from a time frame, you know, just really has things set, and, you know, still internally you just don't know what's going on and how trying to achieve those goals and how trying to stay, you know, on the path. Because a lot of times when you're talking about college students, they're not thinking any further than the next test that they have to take, or, you know, some of them maybe, but the majority, you know, they're like here in the present, mm-hmm. or a couple of days or a couple of weeks, or, you know, when is vacation, when am I going home? But to, you know, really be that focused and driven, you know, you really don't find that as common in young people that age. So I thought that spoke a lot about the character. And in reading, you know, the book and just really looking at how contemplative, how goal-oriented, you know, he was, it really speaks a lot about his character as an individual and as a young man, and how how adult he was, again, for that age, you know. It was just really interesting and really engaging to see, you know, for lack of a better word, how adult he was.
And he was always before his time, always a leader amongst mm-hmm. his younger friends and, you know, for the most part, guiding them in the right direction to do things that were very positive because he could see the big picture.
Right.
And I have to say that those people who are avant-garde and who have that capability a lot of times are totally much more sensitive mm-hmm. and they're pushing the envelope. They're doing things differently. They're out front amongst their peers, so there's mm-hmm. no safety net.
Mm-hmm.
And because people are looking up to them, and you can see in the book that people looked up to him, mm-hmm. his friends all looked up to him, and so therefore he was on a pedestal.
Right.
And, you know, whenever people put you up, you can fall. The higher up you are, the further you have to fall. And so a lot of times in the media you'll hear about, you know, let's say some really brilliant people who take their life by suicide. And it's because they're out there on the cutting edge and they mm-hmm. don't feel they have that support system or the ability to show cracks.
Right. And to be the example, the person that's on the pedestal, the example, then I think often, you know, people tend to hold themselves to a higher standard.
Right, of course.
You know, yeah, definitely mm-hmm. hold themselves to a higher standard. And again, that brings us back to how we interact, and especially when we're dealing with younger people, and not, you know, even people in middle age, you know, that are that are the examples, the outstanding one. And we have to realize that that person is a human being as well. You know, they have emotions, they have sensitivities, and we have to start being available to them, you know, or at least letting them know and trying to help them understand that, okay, it's okay to have flaws. It's okay to say, okay, I need help. It's okay to do that. And that starts at a younger age. You talked about that later in the book, and we'll get to that, you know, how we should start looking at, in particular, our young men and letting them know that it's okay. You know, it's okay to be fragile, you know.
Definitely. And one of the things that young men go through, and this is what the psychologists tell us impacts young men more so than it impacts young women is their first love interest and then their first heartbreak.
Yeah.
So that first heartbreak period is so critical to a young man, and it can totally impact their mental balance from that point moving forward. And so that was an experience that Khalik had where, and I'll read from the book, where he says, I had never experienced pain before or learned how to guard my heart. Someone should have told me about girls who go to the highest bidder. Money had never played a huge role in my life. It was a means to survive, a ticket to the good life that came with getting an education. But if money was going to be the qualified between getting the girl I wanted and getting seconds, then I was going to have big money. That set me off on my quest for money, and what had been a loosely crafted 10-year plan became a detailed map towards success. So that's, you know, one of those critical moments in life that defined his life, but it also was one of the events where a crack developed.
And you can see that from those statements. You can see that thread throughout the book. A couple of things that I saw as threads throughout the book, if we want to look at a couple of signs and a couple of threads in terms of personality was that, you know, it was go big or go home, and also looking out, I mean, the compassion, because it was always a streak of compassion, looking out for the meek, you know, high standards for excellence. And maybe these are things that we can, you know, can take with us to say, you know, when we're looking at our sons or when we're looking at our daughters or brothers, you know, the males in our families in particular, look at these kind of traits. There's no black and white. He used a reference in there, no black and white, a couple of times. Even dealing with the accounting, you know, it's either right or it's wrong. But, the, you know, I saw the term that there's no black and white.
It was either black or white. There was no gray.
No gray. It was either black or white and no gray.
Extremes.
Yeah.
And so that's another signal.
Exactly.
You know. Right.
Exactly. And what I kept, you know, what kept coming back to me is that it is gray.
Life
you
is
know.
Gray. Yeah. Life is definitely gray.
There is gray.
We're playing in the middle.
Yeah.
And when you're on the ends, then that's when you are going to experience imbalance. You can't stay high too long.
Right.
You can't stay low too long.
That's right. And high achievers, you're right, high achievers don't really see gray.
No.
They really do not. And so those are just some things that we need to, you know, take with us and to look out for, you know, especially among the high achievers, the people that also I felt that people that felt they had a responsibility to be the example for family, for friends, for the meek, or, you know, to make sure that people are not run over, you know, people are not taken advantage of. So those are some traits that we can take with us and to, you know, keep our eye on when we are dealing with our friends and families and loved ones or either young people that we might be mentoring, you know, because that's a big big thing now. We're really trying to get people into mentoring. So these are definitely valuable traits and personalities that we, you know, need to observe.
And you know, I subtitled the book A Tiger's Journey because of those traits. And so, again, if I could read from the book, it says, this story is called A Tiger's Journey because tigers are a breed of integrity. A tiger is a male who is the pride of a family, the one who is believed to be strong because he's never seen crying. He is compassionate, loving, a sincere friend, and a wise advisor. Strength is his legacy, courage his birthright, as well as his mask. Yet, because of these attributes of manhood, the world can be a very heavy burden, for a tiger wants to carry the weight for his loved ones. You may never see his pain because he wants you to only see strength. He also tends to have a great smile. We think our tigers are indefatigable, yet they are not. They see a world that does not reflect their compassion and sometimes end up lost. And we never I mean, for me, my son, I always looked at him and said, I never worry about Kalik. He's like a cat. He always lands on his feet no matter what happens. Mm-hmm. He is fine. He was in a car accident that the car was totaled, and he ended up with a busted lip. Mm-hmm. That was Kalik, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He always came out on top. And in retrospect, looking back, I can see, wow, he was the one that I should have been looking out for. And so when we look at our sons and we see, you know, the great things that they do, we also have to remember that they have feelings too, and mm-hmm. that we need to provide an avenue for them to have an outlet for those feelings, the emotions, the anger, the frustration, and not just tell them, man up, men don't cry, because mm-hmm. they do, and they should.
That's right.
But it should be channeled properly.
Exactly. Exactly.
And if not channeled properly, then it comes out anyway, mm-hmm. through anger, through rebelliousness, recklessness, mm-hmm. drunken behavior, whatever the case may be, as it shows up in a different person,
yeah.
some type of erratic behavior will result if you repress anything.
Various coping mechanisms.
Exactly.
Really.
Or projection. It's projection of mm-hmm. something that you're holding inside.
Exactly. Yeah, definitely. And that's why one of the things that I liked about the book, because, like, as you read, you know, he's telling his story, and it's also providing information on what you should look for, you know, tools, you know, is giving you food for thought. And just very, very much, the whole book is very much a learning tool, an instrument to share information and to inspire people. So it's done through a conversation. You know, him telling the reader about his life and the way he experienced his life. So it's very much a sharing experience on so many different levels. As I went through chapter 4, Work Hard, Play Hard,
mm-hmm.
I thought, you know, just, again, the maturity level, the ability to, you know, plan out a life so that you have the opportunity to travel to exotic locations, to look at the 10-year plan and to make readjustments, you know, and to just, you know, be so thoughtful about life at that particular age. One of the things that struck out to me was on page 87, as he was, Kalik was going through climbing and getting into the corporate world and climbing the corporate ladder, and how, again, in an effort to readjust and to pursue the goals, he was trying to adjust and make himself fit in, you know, so that he would not be what was perceived to be intimidating to those in the corporate world. So on page 87, I'm talking about an area where it says, I purchased some glasses in August of 2006 because I was told by another brother in corporate that they would make me appear less intimidating. I never would have thought that showing that you have weakness could relax superiors who may feel threatened. So even though I always had 20/20 vision, I began wearing glasses. And so he, you know, had the forethought and the foresight to try to, again, to adjust so that, you know, he could achieve his goals in corporate America. And one of the things that I also spoke to me is that, you know, he would reach out to you as his mother for advice. He valued that, and he would reach out to that, and he used you as a resource and, you know, reached out to you. So I thought, and you could get that he really did love and value the relationship, you know, that he had with his mother. And he called on that. You know, he, throughout the book, you hear different situations where he relied on, you know, your opinion and, as his mother. So it was not like he was so driven where he would not look for and utilize various resources in his life, various relationships. Again, you could see the relationship when his paternal grandmother, you know, mm-hmm. with how important that relationship was and how that affected his life as well. So while he was focused and driven in so many areas and so many ways, he also had the opportunity look at and value relationships and call on those relationships as well. So that's one of the things that spoke to me throughout reading the book.
Yeah, and then also at the end when he perceived himself as a failure, you could see where he was less likely to call on those relationships because he didn't want others to perceive him as a failure. And the funniest part about it is that he had done more in his 28 years than most people do in 82 years. So there was no way that anyone would have said, son, you're a failure.
Exactly. And that's how the perception, you know, the imbalance in perception, how you could see how that showed up. Because that was very important, you know, how he was perceived to his family and loved ones and the friends. That was very important. And when, you know, something didn't go totally right, it was like, you know, was just very important that they didn't see that aspect. And so that, again, goes back to perception.
And that's another sign of imbalance, when you as an individual feel that it's that important that those external to you, that you have the approval of those external to you, then there's something that is missing from your core belief in yourself. So you have to redevelop that in your relationship with the source, so that you do have a better self-perception of yourself.
Yeah.
It's not reliant on external factors, what you have, what people say, how people respond.
And, you know, in hindsight, and something that struck me at the beginning of the book, too, was his views on religion. And I am, you know, still developing, and I think I've pretty much developed my views on religion. But that is also, have you found in your research that that is also a very important part of a person's or people that go through different types of mental imbalances? Does religion play a really important part? Has that, you know, appeared
through
your
research?
Well,
I wouldn't call it religion. I would call it a strong relationship with the Creator. So, you know, if you have that and you feel that you have that communication with the Creator, then you're less likely to be imbalanced, unless that imbalance is coming from genetics or certainly from poor nutrition and other things that are ingested into your system. Because imbalance can come from always being around loud noises, from, and then that includes loud music or music or sounds that have a vibration that knocks your body out of balance. So, I mean, you know, that imbalance comes from anywhere, but those who have a stronger relationship with Source tend to be able to overcome it better.
And I that's kind of like where I am, and, you know, there's always the discussion about religion and spirituality, and, you know, so I think that, again, pretty much the same thing, whether you call, regardless of what you call that particular source. You know, if you have a pretty good relationship, a strong relationship, so that, and my take on it, so that if you personally, physically do not feel that you're able to do it, and you have to say, okay, well, source, you know, whatever, if you have a specific name that you refer to the source, then you look to that for inspiration and upliftment, then if you need that and to look at it, then that's helpful.
Because you're not trying to do it by yourself.
Exactly.
When you feel that you're doing everything by yourself and you can no longer take care of it, there's nothing else to rely on.
Right.
And then so there's nowhere else to go but to fall.
Yeah, so that's something that we need to take into consideration again, you know, as well. You know, our relationship with Source energy, you know, with the Creator of the universe.
Jah, Allah, God, whatever you want to call it.
Whatever you want to call it, you know, your relationship and having a relationship, you know, so that when you can't do it on your own, you feel that there is something bigger than you and greater than you. And it really is, because it's universal energy.
Right.
Yeah, so, you know, it really is. So, in Chapter 5, Maintaining Balance, Getting Off the Tightrope, we saw, you know, where Khalik did, again,
focusing, looking forward, and trying to reach those goals, try to seek a balance between work and life. You know, and on page 97, there's some information, again, you know, as I was saying earlier, you know, where he was reaching out for your opinion, you know, on how to handle. And that's another thing that we need to really think about in our interactions with people is, you know, today's world, we are really busy people. Most people are really busy. And so, you know, if we're really busy and it might be something very, very, very simple, and that, I think that's where compassion come in, and where just taking a little bit of time for all of us because we're very, very busy because we never know, you know, who's calling us for what and how our response might help people.
Right.
And
that's
how it
true.
Might affect, you know, or how it might swing the pendulum. It could and it could not, but it's just something that in terms of, you know, how all of us are so stressed, you know.
Yeah,
you know, even from little kids are stressed now, you know, because of our environment. And so, you know, just to try to keep these things, that's what the book does. It brings awareness. And even, you know, as we get towards the end, you talk about awareness. Be aware. And that's what I'm getting to. And that's what's so important about reading this book. It gives us tools. It gives us tips. It gives us information. It gives us things to be aware of in our interactions. So that's really something that stood out to me as I read and as I completed the book.
And as you said, it's being aware of our thoughts. And, you know, another section from the book where I wanted to focus on the type of thoughts that Kalik was having so that people could say, you know, am I having these kind of thoughts? And if I am, you know, let me balance. And, you know, it says that I was just tired. Fatigue had me weary all the time. And his thoughts were, if I can't do simple things like pass the CPA exam or get accepted into the university of my choice, what is the problem with me? I no longer believe I can do anything I want to do. Why can't I seem to focus? This effort of putting on a mask of having it all together every day is wearing me down. And I know that, you know, people get to that point and they don't really understand what it is and that it's really at a point where you need to get help. And it's the point where you can't do it all alone anymore, as we were saying.
And bringing the focus and the awareness to, you know, as you said, those types of conversations. Now, how many times, I know I've gotten to the point, maybe to not as the extremes, where I'm like, okay, you know what, this is getting a little bit difficult,
too much,
you know. And so what I tend to do when I get in those situations is typically I'll slow down. I'll really slow down. And, you know, sometimes you get in that situation where they're fleeting thoughts and you just keep going. But, again, you know, you bring these things to the awareness of the reader. And it's done in a way where you're reading, you're experiencing, and then you're being made aware. And it's not just like textbooks type of, you know, awareness. It's not a textbook teaching. It's through a relationship and through experiences that we're being taught and we're being brought to be aware. So, again, the writing style, I really appreciate it, and I think it resonates with very well with the readers.
It's a real-life situation, and in the prologue it says, this story is about me, yet it's for you.
Yes.
I leave you with my life journey as a life lesson. Think about it.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And that's what it is, sharing through someone else's life's experiences. And let's see. As we go on, there was, getting to root issues, you know, and again, through experiencing, through trying to rework and readjust. On page 101, his conversation speaks to really, regardless of where you're going and what you're doing, if you're not getting through to the root issues, then it's never going to be resolved, you know, and just trying to calm down and focus and get to the root of different things. And that's when people really need to, again, try to reach out and seek out, because sometimes we can't find, you know, we can't figure it out. Sometimes we do know. But, again, bringing these thoughts to bear so that the reader can have cues on what to look for and what to respond to and what to seek help for, you know, as we read through the book.
Mm-hmm. So I think you were referring to where it says everywhere you go, if you have not resolved the underlying issues,
mm-hmm.
the underlying issue is still there.
Yeah. Just profound, you know, because quite often we do things and we just keep going and then we keep finding ourselves in the same situation. But if we don't get to what the root cause is, then it's just going to continue to happen. And that, you know, when we see these things happening over and over again, that's an opportunity for us to reach out and to try to seek help.
Mm-hmm.
And could you talk to us about Chapter 6? As I read through that, the backlash of choosing to be authentic. This was a comment that stuck out to me. Oh, yeah, here, where it says, I knew that I'd made my life harder by swimming in a direction opposite of what society would expect of me, opposite of what even some well-meaning friends and families thought I should be going. People looked up to me, yet the only difference between me and them was that I had measurable goals, a plan of action to get there, and a time frame. And, you know, I wasn't really clear on that, because to me it seems like he was doing what society expected of him, you know, or trying to do what society expected of him, or what he felt family and friends expected of him. So I'm not sure, you know.
So he tried to do more than what was ever expected of him.
Okay.
I think he was studying for the LSAT and the CPA at the same time. His goal was to be both a lawyer and a CPA because
right.
the combined skill set would be something that would make him very marketable and something that not many people had.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was always studying, always trying to be more, do more, and nobody expected that of him.
Okay.
And we would actually, I would ask him, are you having fun? Are you happy? You know, are you enjoying life? You know,
mm-hmm.
because he was always, you know, going for the next level, and there was not a lot of time to celebrate his achievements.
Mm-hmm. Right, because it was like after one achievement had been achieved, had been obtained, then it was going to the higher level. So was that more personal, or as a young black male, he didn't think people expected him to do that, or was it personal? Because often our kids get caught up and they say, you know, as a young black male, this is not expected of me, or as
right.
a young black woman, this isn't expected of me, instead of as an individual or as, you know, me or as Sky, I can do this. I'm Sky, I can do this. But as a young black female, I'm not expected to do this, you know, so.
Yeah, that too. And I also think that there was some self-esteem issues there, and he always had to prove to himself that he was better than he subconsciously thought that he was.
Mm-hmm.
And if he couldn't prove it to himself, he could definitely prove it to other people.
Right. Oh, okay, I see what you're saying. Mm-hmm. And that's true in a lot of our personalities.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yep.
Definitely.
Yep.
In a lot of our, we could, you know, I'm sure many people could look at themselves and see where, when that has a place in our lives and our personalities.
There's a poem that he coined that I actually came across yesterday, and I found it, and actually I can't say that he coined it. It's probably something that's anonymous, but it's something that he'd written down, and it says, I bargain with life for a penny, and life would pay no more. However, I begged that evening whenever I counted my scanty store. For life is a just employer. He gives you what you ask. But once you have set the wages, why, you must bear the task. Mm-hmm. I worked for menial's hire, only to learn dismayed that any wage I had asked of life, life would have willingly paid.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's such a deep message mm-hmm. that just says that we actually lower our own bar
mm-hmm.
and that what you ask the universe for, the universe is going to give you.
That's right.
You just have to be consistent with your inner and outward expression.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Meaning
yeah.
that subconsciously you have to believe, your core belief system
yeah.
has to align with
yeah.
what you say that you want and the actions that you're taking.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the main thing is that our core, like you said, the core, our core. And I think that's something that even resonated from the previous discussions that we had. You know, we talked about the gap. What we truly believe deep inside, aligning with everything that we're doing on the exterior,
mm-hmm.
and that's a very valuable lesson and something that all of us can learn from. I'd like that after we really went through the experience and took us on this journey of his life, that as the book winded down, it presented tools and resources for us to look at. But as we wind down on the actual narrative of the book or the comments and colleague taking us through the books, are there any core messages or core thoughts that you'd like to make sure that the reader takes away with them?
Yeah, there's one. Well, there are a few, but one is something that was noted in the book, and it's your unique gifts to the world are yours alone. You are more special than you may ever know. You know, nobody knows what they really mean to another person, and it's really sad that that has to come out in a celebration of life, for example, in the case of Khalid. So I had no idea how much he was loved, and I'm sure he had no idea either, and the impact that he had on so many people's lives that was brought out in that celebration of life, it was just it was amazingly beautiful and
yeah.
sad at the same time because he had no idea.
And, you know, that was the question that kept resonating in my mind because, and that was the question, and I was like, did he really understand how he influenced people and how he uplifted people? And that's what came across. That was my question, because it was just totally amazing, and I was really blown away from that. And then I thought, again, that, you know, it was unfortunate because you could see where he didn't think that at times. Like you said, when we start thinking about our self-esteem and, you know, our value, we may not really truly know. And it gets back to us again where, you know, tell people. You know, express
right.
that.
Right.
Yeah, express that. You know, I really love you. You know, you did this for me. You know, you helped me with this. And I know just within the last year, going through different situations in life or being in different states of mind, for example, something as simple as getting on the elevator, and I've done this so many times to people, and people have like this crazy stare in their eye. And I would get on the elevator and say, "Hi, how are you?"
Yeah.
And they would snap out of it.
Oh,
I'm fine.
Yeah.
You could just see a total shift. And I had that happen to me. I just had this crazy stare in my mind. It was just so many things going on. And, you know, a person got on and said, "Hello, how are you today?" And I'm like, oh, it snapped me right out of it. I'm fine. How are you? You know, but for our close friends, our associates, you know, let people know how much they mean to you. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, say, you know, I love you, or, you know, you mean so much to me, or, you know, just really express those things. Because, again, we never know how it might shift the pendulum of somebody's emotions or
That's
their
right.
thoughts, you know, or shift their energy or something like that. So those, again, those are tools that we can take away, you know, things that we can learn, values that we can bring from this sharing, this really important sharing. And you said, was there anything else you thought or you wanted to leave the readers with as we start getting into the different resources of the book?
No, we can get into the resources, and I can bring up a couple of points there.
Okay. I thought the awareness, you know, again, that's what we've been talking about throughout most of the discussion, you know, being aware, you know, also giving tools to survivors of suicide. That's very important. Often we look at, you know, and which rightfully so, we look at the individuals, but there's also survivors. So the resources that you made available to the survivors, would you like to make some comments on those two issues?
Yes. A survivor of suicide has also gone through a traumatic event, and they're going to be dealing with a lot of the same issues emotionally that the person who took their life by suicide was dealing with as a result. And so the same type of tools that you use to manage anxiety, depression, paranoia, and all of those imbalances are tools that you can use to deal with traumatic experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So some of those are breath therapy, meditation, sound therapy, as I mentioned earlier, the vibration, balancing the body, mind, and spirit. And, you know, simple things, exercise,
mm-hmm.
just getting the energy flowing through your body and removing the blockages.
And talk therapy is a very important one.
Yes, certainly it is.
Yeah. And especially in certain communities, you know, going to talk to someone is really taboo. People think that they can't afford it. They think it's taboo that, you know, again, like the quote that you have earlier about the crazy, you know, people just really feel that it's taboo to go and seek help.
Mm-hmm.
But that's something that we need to start incorporating. If we need help, you know, to be able to go to a professional and talk and just get some guidance. And to, if not anything more than to just get it out of our system to, you know, release that energy, to release those emotions. And so talk therapy is definitely an important one.
Yeah, and one of the points that was made in the book is that the person most likely to prevent you from taking your own life is someone you already know.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to be talking to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And a point you made earlier was that you never know the space that someone is in,
mm-hmm.
and therefore we should always be kind.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that should be our mantra,
mm-hmm.
be kind, be kind, be kind,
yeah.
be kind.
Yeah,
because that little thing that you do that was no big deal to you could be the straw that breaks
yep.
the camel's back for someone.
Very slight shift on that pitch to, you know, just push that pendulum just to either way, and that's something that we need to be conscious of. There's the no suicide agreement. What was your thought pattern behind putting that in the book?
Well, I think that people who already are in that frame of mind need something extra to think about when they consider taking their own life. And so, you know, whether they're approaching that frame of mind or they're already there, if they have the no suicide agreement, then they can look at that and say, okay, I pledged to this, I signed off on this. And if they can even take the next step and make that pact with someone else,
mm-hmm.
then say, you know, well, you know, I felt like this, so I've made the pact that I would not take my life by suicide, that it would be beneficial. And that agreement says, I, and you put your name in, make a pact with myself and all humanity that I will not purposely do harm to myself or another. I will not let the feelings of despair and hopelessness overtake me. Taking my life is not a solution to the pain I am feeling. I will accept the despair as a feeling based on a current situation and not make it a statement about me and my entire future. On my life journey, I will have experiences leading to states of frustration, anger, and hopelessness. If I get to a point of despair, I will try to step out of the unforgiving past, stop thinking about a bleak future, and deal with only getting through the present moment without judgment of my challenges. When I cannot find equilibrium myself, I will get help before taking another step. Once I have restored my balance, I can look at the situation through clearer eyes and make a sound decision.
And this is also it's an agreement, and it's very much a teaching tool as well, very much, because it's helping them to understand the different emotions that everybody goes through or that you might go through in different phases of life, and it's also giving tools onto how to seek health, how to seek help. We do have a question here, and I'm trying to get to it. I don't know if you have access to the board, but there is a question there that I'd like to get to before. Let me see. We're going to call the last four digits of your phone number, caller, and bring you into the conversation. And I think my dashboard just froze up.
Let me see if I can get to
it. It's 4382. I see that they have a question there. Okay, maybe I might be able to get to it now. It keeps freezing. Other tools, while we try to resolve this, other tools that I saw that I thought was very helpful in the chapter for family and friends. You know, you're just giving information about how women can help husbands and boyfriends and fathers and brothers and sons by paying attention to their emotional state. You know, asking them, what were you talking about early? How do you feel? You know, how you're doing, but how do you feel? You know, and show a genuine interest. Yes, we are all busy. You know, we have things going on, but these are people that we love and care about. So let's just take some time to do these things. And then, you know, you also talk about what does not help.
Yeah.
Yeah, and what should you do if someone you know is talking about taking their own life? So a lot of resources. And let's talk about this. You know, what does not help? Trying to tell the person how well off they are compared to other people. You know, minimizing a person's feelings, arguing with them, judging the situation, trying to deal with a suicidal person without professional help. And that's really key.
Yes.
Yeah. And what you should do if someone you know is talking about taking their own life, you know, first and foremost, take the threat seriously. And then, you know, do not leave the person alone. You know, ask the person to give you any weapons or anything they might have. So, you know, call 911. So just some really tangible and valuable steps and tools that people can help and that can help people in these situations. Caller 4382, you're on the line. If you'd like to come in and ask a question, please give us your name and ask a question if you have one.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Oh, good. Hi, Darlene Rayson. This is Dr. Imani. How are you?
I'm good, Dr. Imani. Thanks for joining.
Oh, my pleasure. I have not read the whole book, and I wasn't sure if I'd be able to contribute to the discussion, but in following the discussion and, you know, and your guest who, you know, is going through different parts of, you know, the book, it's been very, very helpful. And congratulations to you on writing this. It's such a powerful, powerful book that can really help so many, you know, families and individuals. And you know, I've worked with youth and, you know, I have a teen theater program, and we, in the past, we've let the youth pick the topics that they wanted to work. You know, we covered diabetes in one play. We covered HIV and delaying sex in another play. And I was really surprised when, you know, we opened it up one time and said, well, what else should we cover? What should we look at? And a number of the young folks said mental health issues. And, you know, we were just surprised, even working that closely with young people, how many young folks had issues that were unresolved, you know, who wanted to express them, needed a place to turn. So, you know, your book can be one of those guiding lights, you know, for a lot of people. And I have other friends, you know, whose children have committed suicide. And you know, it's something that is truly, truly painful, you know, and all of that. So, you know, I admire your courage and your wisdom, you know, in sharing this story, Darlene, with everyone, because it does help to, you know, have what he went through not be in vain, you know, and
yes,
it's something that can help
yes
other people who may be going through similar things. So I really, really commend you. And I'm actually going on a
thank you, Dr.
trip.
Imani. We're winding down. Thank you so much for your comments. But we just wanted to make sure Darlene had a chance to give us some contact information before the show closes down. Thank you for sharing with us.
Thank you, Dr. Imani.
You're so welcome.
And so you can find out more at Young Tiger Foundation, www.youngtigerfoundation.com. You can call Young Tiger Foundation at 678-629-0069. We're on Facebook at Young Tiger Found and Twitter at the same address. And I also have a new product coming out called Think and Be Well, which is a supplemental line that helps you balance your well-being, and a book coming out by the same name.
Awesome. So you have the contact information. Please stay in contact with us and contact with Darlene to get the information that you need. And she's also available to come out and talk to your groups and your young people. So thank you so much, Darlene, for sharing with us this evening and for sharing your writings and colleagues' story with us to inspire and to help others, to inform others. So you have been listening to Sisters in Spirit. Please contact us by email if you need additional information and if you need to contact Darlene Nazair, author of Leaping Over the Hurdles of Life, A Young Tiger's Journey. Thank you for being with us this evening.
You get the book at Amazon.com.
Oh, yes. Okay. You can get the book at Amazon.com. And if you need additional information, please contact Darlene regarding the book. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Bye-bye.
Bye.